Hello and welcome to the Tennis Worthy podcast, coming to you from Wimbledon in southwest London, where Jannik Sinner has just defended his Wimbledon singles title to go alongside Linda Noskova's first major. I'm Chris Bowes. Joining me is my co-host, Patrick McEnroe, the president of the International Tennis Hall of Fame. And just as when we reviewed the Australian Open in January, we're joined by Jill Krabus, who in her 49 Grand Slam main draw appearances managed to beat Serena Williams, which is a noteworthy achievement. We have to start with Jannik Sinner. Patrick, where has his fifth major title elevated him to in the history of tennis?
Well, he's starting to get in there with the guys like, who's that guy, John McEnroe, who won seven.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's decent. You know, Alcaraz, he's already up there. You know, Lendl, Becker, Edberg, six, I think, for a couple of those guys. Lendl's got one more at eight. But the amazing thing is he's 24. And the other incredible thing about Jannik Sinner is that he's doing it on all the surfaces. You know, grass was not his favorite surface when he first came onto the tour. Struggled a little bit with some of the little intricacies of grass, but he has really turned into a hell of a player, but a hell of a grass court player, adding a few wrinkles to his game. So right now he's got five major titles. He's got two here.
Two Australians, and one US.
And one US Open. Looking for that elusive one in Roland Garros, which he probably would have gotten this year if it wasn't for the heat that got to him. But he's won, you know, a lot of big titles already on clay. So the interesting thing to me about today's match was it was sort of a different tempo than he was used to playing because of the big serving from both players, the kind of hit and miss tennis that was played for 2.5 sets, that he wasn't really able to get into a rhythm that he likes to get into. And I think he handled that extremely well because he wasn't getting that many looks. He was trying to tinker with his return of serve position, which he did. And inevitably, that kind of helped him get into some return games and finally break Zverev down.
Jill, we'll come to Zverev in a second, but what do you make of Sinner and where he now stands?
Well, the thing that I just want to add to that is the incredible movement. I think he's almost modernized the movement to a different level. We know that a lot of these guys are sliding on the hard courts. They're, of course, naturally sliding on the clay. But the way Sinner is moving on a grass court, I mean, he is moving to the ball where some of the players usually slide after. So he's elevated to a different level. I think he played phenomenal today. I think Zverev played one of the best matches I've seen against Sinner for a while. He was very aggressive. I think he played to put that match on his racket. I think he did everything possible to win that match, and I think he should hold his head very high with how he performed. I think he went out there with no regrets. And so Sinner, I think I agree with Patrick, a little bit unexpected maybe with how well Zverev came out firing. And it just made him have so much respect for that match. I think he enjoyed himself out there, but it does keep him on that level. But I think it's going to be incredible going forward how maybe Zverev performs with the hardcourt, because now I feel like he has a lot more confidence to perform and repeat the performance he had today.
Because until earlier this year, we were saying, maybe earlier last year, that Sinner is the hardcourt player. Mm-hmm. Alcaraz was the clay and the grasscourt player.
Right.
Now, Alcaraz has the set of majors, and we hope he's going to be back soon. But Sinner has clearly proved himself on both clay and grass, having got to within one point of last year's Roland Garros title.
You know, Jill had a great point about the movement of Sinner, because it won him some absolutely crucial points when he was on the dead run, sliding into shots. Even that last game, that incredible second-to-last point, when he was able to slide into the backhand wing, he did it on the forehand as well, keep himself alive, and also play, you know, kind of in that one transition shot, go from a completely defensive position to an offensive position. So it's incredible to watch how he's developed his all-court game, the power's there. And I think, this guy, if he stays healthy, as you said, Chris, we're all hoping that Carlos Alcaraz comes back quickly, because he's the biggest draw in men's tennis. But Alcaraz, is going to have to up his game when he comes back, because Sinner just gaining in confidence.
Jill, could you play the way Sinner does, the way he moves on the grass courts that you played on, say, 20-odd years ago? I mean, they were more lush in those days. Has the weather actually allowed for that movement, or has he just developed that anyway?
Well, I think this year in particular, because it was so hot, so the court dried up pretty fast and became a little bit more dusty probably earlier on. So I think it suited that style of movement. I think this particular championships, you're right, the grass has changed completely. It was playing a lot lower before. I think the grass was a little bit longer. I think they cut it shorter, a little finer. So it has changed a lot. The ball is bouncing up a lot higher. I think also that is what Patrick alluded to as well, especially with Zverev's serve. It was bouncing so much higher than the previous matches that he had played leading up to the final. So he had to make some adjustments. You saw him varying his return stance, sometimes staying up, sometimes going back. I feel like he was trying to find that range because of how well Zverev was serving and how high it was bouncing up. And I don't think we had that high of a bounce way back when I was playing Chris.
Patrick, let's move on to Zverev now. To me, this has been a remarkable recovery when I take it back 18 months to the Australian Open final, where he was in tears at the trophy ceremony saying, how on earth can I actually make any inroads? Right. Now, okay, he lost today, but he lost in four sets, having played a quite superb first set. And he has worked very hard. And so many people have been asking him at this Wimbledon, is it that you're freed up now because of Roland Garros? And he said, well, there's a bit of that, yes. Mm-hmm. But actually, the reason I won Roland Garros is that I put the work in. Mm-hmm. I've improved everything. He hits his forehand now off the front foot, whereas he always hit off the back foot. He's hitting his backhand and his serve more aggressively. It's been a remarkable transition for him.
Yeah, when you think back to that Australian Open final, which I called, and it was really disappointing, the idea that he didn't think he had a chance, and that you could see that in the way he performed in that match against Sinner. And so to kind of come full circle, and yes, as you said, winning Roland Garros, getting that first major certainly was extremely helpful to his confidence. But as he said, I'm just a better player now, because, you know, he never done that well at Wimbledon. He'd never, you know, gotten past the fourth round here at Wimbledon. And he said, well, yeah, of course, winning Paris helped. And he did say, too, in his on-court comments, which were very gracious after in the ceremony, you know, about how what it's been a great 2 months for him. So I do think that was a big, big factor in how well he played here. But I think, remember, this is a guy who had the yips on his serve. You know, was double faulting, you know, double-digit times in a lot of matches. So he's fixed that. I really love the way he came forward today, too. He came forward. He was good at the net. I think that could continue to develop as part of his game. Because, yes, he's on the front foot more often on the forehand. But I think coming to the net also would save his body as well, because he's a guy that likes to grind, likes to play long points. But I think he's realized now, hey, if I can save myself in these majors and not have to be working that hard to win in 3, 4, 5 sets in the early rounds, you come out and you play in the semis and the finals and you're feeling pretty good.
Now, I'm going to phrase this question carefully, because I don't want to be accused of lobbying the president of the International Tennis Hall of Fame. Yeah. But in a few years' time, people will have to consider whether to put Zverev into the Hall of Fame. His status has now, not only is he a Grand Slam champion, but he's been a finalist at all four majors, and he's an Olympic gold medalist. I mean, that's quite a body of work.
You know, I was actually thinking about that during the match today. I didn't bring it up, but it didn't feel right at the time. But I think he's a Hall of Famer right now. And I'm not a voter now that I'm a part of the team. I was a voter in the past until I became the president. And I think if you look at other players that are in with one win, Andy Roddick, for example, Michael Chang, Goran Ivanišević, Michael Schick, he's got a resume, you know, with his master's titles wins, you said winning Olympic gold, the consistency as well. So to me, I would say if he retired tomorrow, he's a Hall of Famer. Now, I'm not a voter now. Maybe you could vote. Maybe you vote, Chris. So what do you think?
Well, I mean, I would say actually that the breadth of work probably does, certainly brings him into the frame. I mean, there are maybe other factors that come into it, and that's not our purpose now. I would just say that the last 5-6 weeks have enhanced his overall standing. Jill, he's overcome a certain amount of self-doubt. We were talking about the Australian Open 18 months ago. How does one do that?
Well, I think it's like you said, it started at the beginning of the year. I mean, it was him taking a mindset at the beginning of the year to change the way he was playing Zverev. And he said, I want to play more aggressive. I'm going to stay up more on the baseline. He's coming into the net more. Now, today was awesome that I saw. I love that he was coming forward, but he was also coming forward off something that was way more aggressive than in the past. And so it made his life a lot easier to handle the volleys. Having said that, he still was someone stretch volleys unbelievable. So he's got great hands, but it was a mindset he took to the beginning of the year, and he stuck to it. He said, I want to play differently. And he's stuck to that, which was so important because he decided to take some losses that way too. And he didn't back off of that game plan. He kept after it despite those losses. And having to go through that goes a long way. And I think that's part of the reason why he won the French Open and got to the finals here, because he didn't change that style, that tactic that he had ingrained in him from the off season to January when he started the year.
So we've got Zverev and Sinner. We've covered them. We also need to cover the two Czechs who made history in the women's singles. Linda Noskova, I mean, it was a remarkable final for her ability to come back after a pretty emotionally devastating second set. But I think one of the things that we'll all remember is the composure she had when she actually credited her mother, who died just before Wimbledon 2 years ago. And I don't think there was a dry eye in the house, was there?
I was crying. I was crying way before that, but that made me cry even more. It's unbelievable. And I think there were some people that didn't know that. And I think it was the first time she had actually spoken outwardly, openly about it. And to do that was so important to her. But the way she came out in that third set, I almost think it's almost impossible to put into words how incredible that mental strength was for her to be able to do that after having lost championship points and have to reset. But I'm sure you both saw her press conference afterwards. It's unbelievable just to hear what she had to say, that, you know, she wasn't gone for very long. She came out pretty quickly, but she reset immediately, and she said, you know, I want the big trophy, not the small trophy. But it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to go out and produce that type of tennis and let it go as quickly as she did, and it was phenomenal.
Yes, the story going is that she saw the winners and runners-up
trophy right? Yeah.
When she went out for the bathroom break and thought, I'm having the bigger one. She did need to save three break points in the opening game of the final set, which I think was the second big turning point.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was a key for her. And then she got a quick break and she kind of relaxed again. But what a display of power hitting, you know, the timing off both wings, the spot serving. I mean, it's not a big serve, but boy, is she effective when she gets that first serve in. I did her semifinal match, and I was just blown away by how well she was hitting those targets on the serve. I mean, it's a 111, 112, so it's a good solid speed, but it's not like, you know, one of the Rybakina or Sabalenka speed-wise. But man, when she hits the corners and then she gets that first strike off both wings, I mean, the forehand could go astray a little bit when she got a little bit nervous. But to Jill's point, the fact that she was able to put that behind, I mean, that's remarkable, because you're you know, multiple match points away from winning one of the most dominant finals in Wimbledon history.
It would have been 6-2, 6-2 in 68 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Converted the first match point.
Exactly. And you were right there on the cusp of that. And then all of a sudden you're in a dogfight in the final set. So I learned more about her by the way the match ended up, like that she had to come back and do it, her character, than if she'd won it 6-2, 6-2.
It was a remarkable victory, and she also said afterwards she didn't look in the royal box because she did not want to see Martina Navratilova and Jan Kodesh because she did not want to get phased.
Yeah.
That's focus.
Yeah, not to mention Petra Kvitova, who she said was one of her heroes, you know, who won two Wimbledon
titles.
Right. She was in there as well. We're a team, Chris. That's why we cover each other. So, it was remarkable, her focus, to be able to come back and refocus and really play, because Muhova was still playing well. She didn't play well the first set and a half, but then even in the third set, she was still, you know, she'd found her game. So the fact that Linda was able to win it when her opponent was playing well was even more special.
Now, I'm going to praise Karolina Muchova here, but I'm going to do so in a way that's slightly controversial. For me, the best set of the tournament was the final set of the semi-final between Goff and Muchova. That was brilliant tennis. There was flair, there was variety, there was the slice backhand that Muchova plays so well, which Jana Novotná helped her with, her volleys, her drop volleys. It provided such wonderful, contrasting tennis. And I have to say, although I was full of admiration for Zverev and Sinner, they played 2.5 sets with only one break point. Mm. They played a superb first set tiebreak, but 16 points, of which the first 15 went with serve. we need Muchova at the top, yeah. along with Krejcikova and others like that. What hope can you give us that she can be up there?
I think she will be. I think the key for her, she has to stay healthy. I mean, I think she would have been at the top consistently already if she didn't have so much disruption over the last few years with different injuries and that she had to deal with. But, I mean, we've all witnessed these 2 weeks how well she can play, how well she carries herself. She's got every tool in her game, and it's just fun to see the creativity that she can bring all the time. I think we're going to see her in many more finals, but it's just going to be about her being healthy. And I agree with you. I thought that semifinal was absolutely fantastic. That tiebreak at the end, I felt like in the beginning, the quality was so high. And then as soon as it started to get to the end, there were up and down moments from both, which is completely understandable. Maybe a couple nervy points. But then at the end, I love the way Muchova finished that tiebreak. She took it on a racket. She finished very strong, which is huge after having moments of nervousness. But I thought she handled herself incredibly well.
And I'd just like to put in a word for Coco Gauff in her press conference after that, where she said that first four questions were about the drop shot she missed on match point. And she said, look, I never expected to get to the semifinals. So for me, the tournament was a bonus. Players like Jannik Sinner and Roger Federer have missed match points in Grand Slam finals. It's okay. I'm over it. And the implication was, you need to get over it as well. Whether she fully was over it, I don't know, but great attitude.
Well, she's a class act, and she's a champion. She's done a couple of times already in her career, one major title. So, you know, it was a brain cramp when she went for the drop shot. She'll be the first to admit it. But, again, as she said, if I made it, I'm a hero, and it's a great shot to try under pressure. But, you know, I think we all know that wasn't the case. It was a case of where she got tight. But this happens. And as for Carolina Muchova, how do you say her name?
Muchova.
Yeah, because if you go, you listen to her, the way she says it, it's always a little different. But I love her all-court game. I've always loved watching her. She's a little streaky, which is what's, I think, preventing her from winning a major. And we saw that in the final that she lost to Iga a couple of years ago on the clay. We saw that a little bit here. When she's on, she's on. But she's got to find that, to me, she has to find that range where she can play at, you know, 70, 75% and still be effective. Because I feel like in the biggest matches, I feel like she can be super hot and then she can just start missing forehands out of nowhere, even though her forehand is an amazing shot when it's on. So if she could somehow find a way when things aren't going exactly the way she wants to still, like, not give the match away, I think that she can win. She can win majors, but it's going to be tricky because I think the consistency for her in the semis and the finals is what's missing.
Well, Jill mentioned about the fact that she has struggled with injuries, and I do
remember.
Well,
that's part of it, no doubt. Yeah.
But after she lost to Swiatek in Roland Garros final in 2023, we were saying then, if she can stay fit,
right,
the world is her oyster. We're saying the same thing now.
Thing.
And it's been a remarkably physical tournament. We'd lost the top two British players, Jack Draper and Emma Raducanu, before a ball was struck. We didn't have Alcaraz. We haven't got Holger Rune waiting for him to come back. It is a physical sport these days, isn't it?
More so than ever because of the speed and the intensity of, you know, each rally, point in, point out, the balls, the racket. So it's more intense every time you go out there. So that's why you're seeing the players do all the off-court stuff, do all the recovery work, have full teams to help them, you know, mostly recover. But that is definitely a huge factor, being able to stay on the court. Stay healthy enough that you can compete, deal with some little niggles here and there that you can manage, and that you don't put you off the tour for multiple months at a time. And that's what's happened to Caroline over her career.
Jill, what would you say about the physicality? I mean, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. It is a physical sport, but we need to keep our marquee players and, in fact, you know, the players who can inspire us healthy.
Yeah, I agree. It's become the most physical I think I've ever seen it. And everyone's getting stronger. Everyone's getting faster. I think that's why you're seeing players slide all the time now on hard courts and grass courts, because you're not going to be able to get the ball unless you do that. That's how fast it's becoming. It's just incredible, all these players, how able they're able to stay balanced with how fast everything is coming. But, it's going to be that's why the focus has been a lot about recovery, because no matter how much you train, you want to get faster, you want to get stronger. Everyone has for a while now been into nutrition and diet, but so much focus now has been on recovery because of that particular reason.
I'm going to ask you in a minute for a takeaway from this Wimbledon, but before we do that, Patrick, you had one particular moment just in the margins of Wimbledon where you went with Roger Federer, a group of people, a group of youngsters, as part of the Be Legendary. What stands out for you about that particular event with the great Roger Federer?
You know, Roger's a class act. That's what stands out to me. It's amazing what he does with the kids and the time he takes with everyone. It's absolutely remarkable to see him kind of do what he does. And for me, it was just a pleasure to be part of it. We've been able to, at the Hall of Fame, and able to partner with Wimbledon at the Australian Open and work with them with their programs for the kids. So it's really special. And Roger, really wants to help the Hall of Fame. And he was able to help us a lot. And I was blown away by his attention to all the kids, you know, because when he goes out there to do something, he's gonna do it right. So we're looking forward to seeing him in Newport. That's going to be a special weekend.
Eventually, the kids will get so old that they'll say, well, who's Roger Federer?
You know what? He seems like he's more popular now than when he was playing. That's kind of aura he has right now. So we're looking forward to having him and seeing all the Hall of Famers that are going to show up. There's going to be a lot of them in Newport.
Jill, can I ask you for a takeaway from this Wimbledon? It's difficult on the night
when it
finishes. Okay, but what will stand out? What will you be boring your friends with over a beer in years to come?
Well, Arthur Ferry, of course, the road that he had, the journey that he had here. I think a lot of people didn't maybe know his name before this tournament, and it was an incredible run as a wild card. I know there's a lot of hype on him. I love the fact that everyone was praising his tennis, but I've heard no matter how good his tennis is, he's that good of a human being. So that's good, a good reason to even get behind him. But that's always a great story, is when someone has a breakout moment in a Grand Slam. The two finals, I think, were unbelievable quality. The drama of the women's, how hard everyone was hitting the ball, how good the men's final was too. Just some of the points were outstanding. And I just also love mentioning someone who's had an amazing career that's inspired so many people, the retirement of Stan Wawrinka, or his last tournament here. It was an emotional moment. He lost to Berrettini. Of course, Berrettini gave him so much respect out in the court and gave him that moment. And he got very emotional. And this is his last year, so I always get sad when someone retires. But I think it's important to reflect back and just talk about how much they've inspired a whole new generation.
Which leads me actually onto one of my moments. Because I speak German, I went into Zverev's press conferences and picked up a few things that a lot of people who only followed the English didn't get. And one of them was somebody asked him, was it a dream of yours to win Wimbledon? Because until this year, Wimbledon was by far and away his weakest slam. Never been beyond the fourth round. A bit like Wawrinka, who won the other three and never really did that well here. And Zverev said, to be honest, no, but that's to do with television. Because when I was growing up, the Australian, the French and the US Opens were on free-to-air television. So we watched them.
Wow. Wimbledon
was on pay TV. And I thought, it's the kind of thing that when those of us who are lucky enough to go to these events, we don't stop to think about the profile of an event based on how many people can actually see it on TV. I found that a remarkable moment.
Yeah, you know what I found remarkable? I think that is remarkable, because Wimbledon was always the one tournament, if you were just a casual sports fan in the U.S., that you would watch. You'd breakfast at Wimbledon. We all grew up with that. But so that's interesting. The other thing I found interesting was the heat. This year, I'll remember this year for no rain, which is the first time that's happened, I think, since the 1970s. So the conditions sort of changed. We had Paris, we had crazy heat, we had it again here. So I think that affected the surface, the conditions, as Jill talked about earlier, the speed. I mean, I noticed Sinner when he was, because I was right there in the bunker calling the match for ESPN, when he was standing way back to, usually what happens on a grass court, if you go way back, the ball really will slow down by the time it gets to you. And it was almost like Zverev's second serve was like speeding up. It was jumping off the court, and he was having trouble just kind of timing it. So I'll remember that. I'll remember Serena, of course, coming back, because that was a huge story.
We haven't mentioned her, have we?
Yeah, that was a big story the first couple days of the tournament. I thought she played, actually, for someone that hadn't played in 4 years, pretty well. But she was also playing against a solid player in Maya Joint, but not someone that's a top player in the world. But I think she realized pretty quickly that I thought she was hitting the ball about the same way she did when she left, and she realized that that's not good enough, early in the second set, and she was able to raise a little bit her level. But so that, I'll remember that. And as Jill said, Stan, the man. American men not quite delivering. I thought we'd have multiple guys into the second week of the tournament. We had a bunch into the third round, but only Taylor Fritz was the one that was able to get through to the last eight. So I'm expecting better things from them.
What you didn't hear, again, because it was in the German part of Zverev's press conference, just before he played Taylor Fritz in the quarterfinals, Zverev said, look, if I do what I am supposed to do, and I do it reasonably well, I will win.
Mm. He was right.
It wasn't said arrogantly. It was just he felt he had Taylor's number. And that's slightly worrying for Taylor.
That's surprising because he's lost to him seven times in a row.
Exactly. When you look at the head-to-head, and he still comes up with that. And then he had the score to match it as well, 4-4 and 2.
Well, the other thing I'll remember, too, in addition, is just Sinner being Sinner and able to repeat, which is never easy, was Sasha Zverev saying on court that for the first time in his career, as a 29-year-old about to be 30, he actually thinks he can win this tournament. So I thought that was good to hear.
Well, with these memories that will probably remain with us, some of them for a long time, we wrap up this edition of the Tennis Worthy podcast, which is brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. We end the third major of the year with three different men's champions, Alcaraz, Zverev and Sinner, and three different women's champions, Rybakina, Andreeva and Noskova. What a year it's turning out to be. And our next stop is the enshrinement at Newport, Rhode Island. Roger Federer and Mary Carrillo. My thanks to Patrick McEnroe and Jill Krabers. Check out more discussions, interviews and features at tennisfame.com/podcast. From me, Chris Bowers, it's goodbye from London.